You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
As you guys know, I've been fascinated by the political elections, not only the ones coming up, but every political election. And now I've been able to also, I've been betting on the elections pretty hard, going pretty hard at it, because of my inside information guy, Phil Stutz, who's campaign manager for dozens of elections in this upcoming race. And just to kind of place my bets for the final week, I'm up about 30 or 40% since he last came on the podcast. And just to kind of tweak and adjust my bets for the final week, I've asked him on again to give us his guidance on what will happen on Election Day next week.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show.
So, Phil, I know this is a busy time for you. 1 week before the elections, how many campaigns altogether are you involved in? Is your company involved in managing?
Oh, that's a really good question. I have a spreadsheet
that's
up
right
now. That's
the easiest question I have.
You would think I would know. They're a lot. So I would have to pull my spreadsheet up and look it out. And now all of a sudden my computer is not letting me do that. So
roughly governor, senator, congressman, races. Yeah. How many of those?
Let's see. We've got 3 U.S. Senate, 3 governor, and then a ton of congressional races, and then state ballots and a lot of other things around the country.
Like if someone was running for like state Senate, like not U.S. Senate, but state Senate, how much would it cost to like hire your company to run the campaign?
That's a really good question, because we've kind of stopped doing a lot of the really small races because there's just, we almost can't make money on it. And we like the bigger races. Obviously it's more fun there. It's more at stake and all that stuff. So, I'm going right now. So I'm going to tell you this, we're around 65 different races right now around the country.
Oh my gosh. So you're incredibly busy, but thank you for coming on the podcast. You have your finger on the pulse. I'm just going to quickly ask you a bunch of questions related to next week's elections. I think all your predictions last time seem to have come through. Like, first off, and this is not political in the sense of just because you believe someone's going to win a race doesn't mean this podcast or you believes in that what that person says or opinions. This is just about, essentially, for me, this is about gambling right now. Now, yes, I care who wins different races, but that has nothing to do with who will win. Who I care wins has nothing to do with who will win. So a lot of the predictions about who will win and what parties will win that you predicted a month ago have come true. And I know, and the reason I know this is because I made bets on every single one of your predictions, and I'm up like 30 or 40% right now. So I owe you a nice steak dinner.
Well, we should start a political gambling hedge fund. Come on.
I know. Well, you know, I've talked to people who are interested in political gambling hedge funds, but there's no place on the world I can find where you can bet in size. You know, like even predictive.org, you're limited like $1,000 per bet.
Right.
I don't know. And I looked at Las Vegas. It's not allowed, but I'm still looking around. So it looks like the Republicans are going to take the House and the Senate. That's pretty obvious.
Well, not the Senate, but the House for sure.
Well, okay. What are the questionable ones in the Senate?
Well, when we last talked, we said there are seven, basically there were seven races that were toss-ups, right? There were four races that Republicans had to defend.
Phil, can I interrupt you? The three races that you call toss-ups, I felt, have now moved in the red direction.
Georgia,
Arizona, Pennsylvania.
That's right. So there were seven toss-ups. Four were Republicans had to defend. They have to win those if they want to get the majority back. I can safely say that three of them are done. I mean, they're off the board. They're going to be Republican wins. It's Ohio, Wisconsin, and North Carolina. The Pennsylvania race is a defense because it is a Republican-held seat right now, but it's leaning. I mean, since the Fetterman, Dr. Oz debate, it has swung heavy on the Republican side. And then really, you were right. There's actually three pickup opportunities. This is where the majority comes in state, because right now we have a 50 Republican, 48 Democrat, and two independent Senate. The two independent Senate in the Senate are... Angus King of Maine, he caucuses with the Democrats, and Bernie, he caucuses with the Democrats. And then the tiebreaker is Kamala, right? The Vice President of the United States. So that's why they have the majority, even though it's a 50-50 Senate.
Yeah.
And so the Republicans have to defend, and then they've got to pick up a net one to win the majority. And right now, the one defense that's on the sort of the fence right now is the Pennsylvania race, the Fetterman versus Oz, and that is swinging heavily towards Oz going into this last few days. Georgia, the controversies and scandals around Herschel Walker have actually seen it benefit Herschel Walker. So
how could that be? Like, some of those scandals are pretty horrific.
Right. I think people are seeing it and saying this is politics. Whether it's true or not, I'm not defending true or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, in the voters' minds, it's almost hard in the stance that we have to make some kind of change. And so you're seeing that race, the momentum is going towards Herschel Walker. In Nevada, Adam Laxalt is a pickup seat that's being held by the Democrats right now. And he has consistently led in almost every single poll for the last month. So you would see that as a pickup. And then the two that are, to me, the three on the fence right now are Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona. It's going to come down to those three, hands down. Nothing else. Everything else is pretty much locked in. So Arizona, you basically have Blake Masters down 9 points, 6 weeks ago, and he's either down one or two or tied in every poll now. And then you've got Georgia, which we just talked about, and Pennsylvania, we talked about. So that's really what's going to come down.
What were the first three? Ohio, Wisconsin, and what else?
The Republicans have to defend Ohio, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. But Ohio, J.D. Vance is going to win that. Wisconsin, Ron Johnson is going to win that. North Carolina is going to be a defense for Republicans, and they're going to win that one. And I believe Nevada right now is off the board with Adam Laxalt. And so now you've got three that are toss-ups, but they're all leaning and have continued momentum-wise to go towards the Republican candidate.
It's interesting the effect Peter Thiel has quietly on all of these races. Like Blake Masters, obviously, was his co-author on 0-1, and that's the Arizona candidate. And J.D. Vance, at least according to the debates that I watched for the Ohio debates, Tim Ryan and J.D. Vance, Tim Ryan was saying J.D. Vance got $15 million from Peter Thiel.
Yeah, your boy Tim Ryan is not going to win.
You know, and I feel it's first off, whether or not I always agree with Tim Ryan's issues, I don't say he's far left, but he's definitely left. And I admire him for running for Speaker of the House against Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard thing. Like, he basically is essentially kicked out of the house after that.
Right. For sure. All right. So I think one other thing that I'll bring up is in these elections, okay, these types, every 2 years, right, whether it's midterms or presidential, you usually see three types of momentum coming in for one party or the other. Not every election. I'm talking a momentum election, right? You see which I would say is about 80% of the time, you see a 1 to 2 point bump from what you see in polling on election day. So if Blake Masters is down 1 right now, and he's continuing his momentum surge, you could see him winning by a point. See what I'm saying? It's like a 1 or 2 point swing, right?
Right. I'm predicted the Arizona race is pretty even, 50-50.
Right.
Actually, it's 54 cents Republican, 50 cents Democrat, which is yep. weird that it doesn't end up to 100.
Then there's about 19% of the time you see some wild swing where it goes not 1 to 2 points, but 2 to 5 points. All right. That's like 2014 midterms under Obama, 2010 midterms under Obama. You saw a little bit of this in 2018, but there was also some Republicans actually held and defended a lot more than in the Senate and some of these other places. So, and then there's this rare outlier that happens just every once in a while. I call it the 1% chance, but it goes beyond 5 points on election day, right? The momentum is swinging so big that it is just missed by everybody, right? And that's a 5+ momentum swing from what you believe the results are going to be. And so the question to me is this a 1 to 2 point momentum swing in the last, you know, we've seen over the last 3 to 4 weeks? Is it a 2 to 5 point swing or is it a 5+? 5+ is very rare. Like I've only seen it once or twice in my life. So you've got to kind of think about that. You were seeing, you know, is maybe the 5-point swing happened already in the Blake Masters, Mark Kelly race, right? It went from 9 points down to even, right? But if he wins, Blake Masters wins, that's a massive swing. And over, you know, just over 6 weeks, a couple other things, I was thinking about this before. A Wall Street Journal poll came out today. The best party to handle inflation, Republicans are plus 21 on that. Also, wow. In that same Wall Street Journal poll came out today, there has been a 26-point swing away from Democrats to Republicans since August amongst two sets of voters. I mean, you know, combined, Latinos and women, suburban white women. That's not typically the Republican swing, right? The Republican swing is either college male educated or white college or non-college educated. And so to see these swings, I mean, it's a big tsunami. It feels like heading
Why
into...
Why have women swung so much?
The number one concern among voters right now is crime and safety, inflation, and immigration.
And where does, like, you know, there's been all sorts of things, issues in the past few months that have been very important, like pro-choice, pro-life.
Yep. It is important. It's not the most important. And if the voters are going into the polls on election day, they go, yeah, I'm pro-choice, but this country's falling apart. And right now, pro-choice isn't as important as, you know, the safety of my family, taming crime in the streets. Listen, here's what I mean. Let me just give you a real example. In the state of Oregon, where a lot of this sort of defund the police, Antifa has been going on since the pandemic, inside Portland, they're about to elect their first Republican governor. And God, I didn't think about it. I don't even know how long it's been. But the Republican is about to win the governorship of frickin' Oregon. That's insane to me.
Still pretty close, unpredicted, actually. But you think do you think it's a done deal?
I think the Republican's going to win the state. She's been leading for a couple of weeks now, and that feels stronger than someone surging at the last minute that may not surge, right? Because a lot of these states, the early voting has already started. I mean, a lot of these people have already banked a third of their votes. And so here's a couple others. In Michigan, another lockdown, COVID lockdown state, right? A Insider Advantage poll just came out today. I was just looking at it. It's a likely voter poll. And it has the race tied between Gretchen Whitmer and Tudor Dixon.
You're kidding, because predicted has Gretchen Whitmer at like 75 cents.
I still think the odds are that Whitmer, there's like 8 polls out right now, right? There's 2 that are basically tied and 6 with Whitmer in the lead. That's why you're seeing that in predicted. But are you seeing a 1 to 2 shift momentum? 2 to 5 point shift? Or is this going to be, you know, some massive avalanche? And then there's the Nevada governor's race, which is all, I mean, think about the jobs that were lost during COVID, right? In that state, especially in Las Vegas. And the Republicans, Joe Lombardo, or the Republican candidate, they've had a Democratic governor, and Joe Lombardo is 1,000% going to win. Take it to the bank. He's going to win that race.
Which state was this again?
In Nevada.
Nevada governor's race. Let me see if I can find the odds. They don't have that market here for some reason.
And so I'm saying, if you look at some of these states that went heavy on lockdowns, went heavy on defund the police. Look, what did you see the New York poll that came out today? For the first time ever. All right. Zeldin is I think he's completely tied with, I can't pronounce her name, Hochul. The New York governor's race, James.
Yeah,
the Republican is now tied. And by the way, Lee Zeldin, who is the Republican candidate, he was down 20 points 2 months ago. And so what you're seeing is people are finally starting to pay attention to everything. They're trying to pay attention to everything, not just abortion that pops up because of the Supreme Court and then it fades, right? It's not that abortion isn't a big issue. It is. That's why every Democrat's running on it. Unfortunately, there are bigger issues to fry. And voters, look, even if Lee Zeldin doesn't win in New York, the fact that in a poll he's tied in the state of New York is total craziness to me. That should never happen in a liberal Democratic state like that.
Well, what happened when George Pataki won for governor of New York?
It's not the same. I listen, when was Pataki governor? 1996 to 2004?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah. And has there been a Republican since?
No.
No, 18 years. And is New York more conservative or more liberal since then?
It's definitely more liberal.
Right.
And look, even Pataki, he wasn't like a right-wing conservative. And before that, it was Nelson Rockefeller was governor of New York, and he was a liberal.
And you also had Al D'Amato as the senator from 1980 to whatever, 2002, whatever he was in. So what I'm saying is it's not the same state. It's more liberal. And that's because, and think about this, it's even crazier. The exodus out of New York City and the exodus out of the state of New York during COVID to go move somewhere with whatever, more ability to have more freedom, right? Have more space, more just to get out. These are voters that typically would probably be willing to vote Republican from time to time. So the people that are left are the ones that said more masks, more mandates, more everything, right? Or maybe not. Maybe they just weren't, they didn't have choices like other people. And now they are about to exercise their choice. And that doesn't mean Zeldin will win. But for him to be this close, that's pretty crazy.
Wow. So what trend has surprised you the most in the past few weeks?
About 2 weeks ago, they said, there's this big, it was the first time it was like red alert with all the media. Oh my God, the Republicans are out of a sudden going to, they're winning every race, right? And I thought, ooh, that's the kind of story you want told 3 days before the election, not 3 weeks.
Right.
Because now you're giving the opposition, the Democrats, 3 weeks to make a case that don't do that, right? And they've got time and they're going to have money and they're going to spend it. And you've even said this the last time we talked in September. They've vastly outspent the Republicans in this election cycle. It's not even close, right?
Really? I didn't know that, because you read the stories. Like, again, you have J.D. Vance versus Tim Ryan, and it seems like J.D. Vance outspent Tim Ryan.
Well, yeah, that's there are cases, sure. But on the aggregate or the whole, they've outraised Republicans significantly. Blake Masters, even though he's been funded also by Peter Thiel's super PAC, but he's been outraised, it's something like 5 or 10 to 1 in his campaign. Wow. And so the fact that these races, even though the Republicans are being outspent, says a lot, right? And so I'm thinking, oh, Democrats got a lot of money. They got 3 weeks to go. You're going to see this thing tighten. And what we've actually seen is the numbers have even held or even started to move even more towards the Republican candidates around the country. And so It's a fascinating, fascinating moment as we go into Tuesday.
So I know this is a specific question, but how many GOP Senate seats do you think we'll see after these elections?
Great question. I'm going to give you a nuanced answer. Mm-hmm. Not to avoid the question. If you're going to put a gun to my head, I say 52 or 53 Republicans in the U.S. Senate. But there are two factors that I think everybody's got to pay attention to. And I mark this down because if it happens, you heard it here first. One is that in Georgia, the state you're in, there's a good chance that Herschel or Warnock doesn't get to 50%. And because there's a third party candidate on the ballot, and if it doesn't get to 50%, we got to go to a runoff. And that's in another month. So we may not know, right? In Pennsylvania, they have already been saying that don't expect election results to be finished on election night, that it could be a week before you get final election results. You know, I live in the state of Florida. We're going to have our election results done by about 8:30 Eastern time or 9:30 Eastern time, like an hour after the polls close, they're done. They've got it. The fact we have a state that can't count their votes for up to a week is insane to me. Then you're going to see total chaos. The stuff that everybody's dreading is what you're going to see. Because if Republicans could get to 51 on election night without Pennsylvania and Georgia, there's going to be a little air let out of the balloon. But if it's 50 Republicans and then these two races will decide whether the Democrats or the Republicans control the Senate, everything you've dreaded from the Civil War scenario, by the way, James, you'll have to see 7 million more political ads for the next month. There will be voter fraud charges out of Pennsylvania. There will be voter fraud charges out of Georgia. There will be protest. There will be chaos. There will be violence. There will be all of these things. And no one's talking about this yet, but that's what I would say that I'm looking at and going, if Republicans get to 51, then a little of that air is let out of the balloon. There will still be a big fight. There'll still be a lot of chaos. But if Georgia and Pennsylvania are not decided on election night, and it is 50 Republicans now and 46 Democrats, two independents, and then these two races decide the Senate, oh my God, it is going to be bad. It is going to be bad. Bad for our country, bad for our culture, bad for everything.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I agree with you. Like, nobody needs a worse variation of 2000, you know, when it was Al Gore versus W and all the fighting and, you know, bitterness that happened there. This would be 10 times worse. And
10 times.
But, you know, I feel Pennsylvania, I don't even think of Dr. Oz as Democrat or Republican. Like, he's just Dr. Oz. Like, if you told me he was running as a Democrat, I would be like, okay, that makes sense also.
Yeah. Totally.
And Fetterman just doesn't seem qualified at this point. You know, and I'm not, and by the way, this is not like an endorsement or anything. Again, like for you know, for all these races, are these really the two best people in the entire state to be representing that state? Probably the answer is they wouldn't even make the top 1,000. But the reality is people know who Dr. Oz is. He's a celebrity. He's kind of been a moderate celebrity. I mean, he's kind of been an in-the-middle celebrity for middle-class America for decades. And Fetterman is sort of like this unknown guy. Like, if you were to ask me point blank who would win, I would automatically say Dr. Oz, regardless of party. What's the issue against him?
I mean, it's just it's a very, you know, we don't, you know, there are states that we call purple states. There are red and blue combined, right? So they kind of swing both ways. But Pennsylvania has been a pretty good blue state for a long time, even though they have in the state house or the state senate, I think they have a Republican majority. They have this Republican senator, Pat Toomey, who's retiring. And, but, you know, they've had some Republican governors in the past, but it's Trump won it in 16 and came pretty close, you know, to winning it in 20.
And Dr. Oz is like a New Yorker. Like, he's like a liberal. You would think someone from New York has more, he's going to attract a more liberal audience, whether he's a Republican or not.
I don't know. It just, this is a very difficult state to predict.
And sadly, Fetterman had a stroke that was very obvious in the debate. Now, that doesn't disqualify him. You know, I have strong feelings for him and his family that I hope he's okay. But I don't think people want to vote for that, for someone who's, you know, not necessarily mentally, we don't know what his mental status is.
Well, Oz's numbers have gone completely up since that debate. And people that were on the fence or had supported Fetterman, you know, maybe tepidly supported Fetterman, have said he's not prepared to be a senator. And again, that's because, you know, I mean, I keep going back to, who are these people that put them out on stage? Isn't this some sort of abuse that they're being forced? And maybe he has the faculties to make his own decisions. But
well, I think Fetterman made the decision that, hey, people will be, you know, I care about my state and people will be sympathetic to my plight. And they'll see that, yes, although I say words wrong, I all my decision-making faculties are there and they'll feel sympathetic towards me.
Maybe. He has a chance to get off of the ballot in August, you know, and have a replacement. And he decided not to do that. And he knew that he couldn't listen to questions and answer them. He had to read it on a screen. He knew he had the issues. This is, you know, we're talking almost 3 months before that debate. You know, he had the stroke before the primary. Before the primary, and he didn't say anything. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, like, you know, Democrats, I mean, they just like Republicans put themselves in terrible positions sometimes. Well, this is one of those as well that's not helping the Democrats at all.
Well, predictit.org, which party will win the Pennsylvania Senate race? They have Republican over Democrats 62-43.
Yeah, I think that's fair right now. That's fair. One of the things we didn't talk about just happened is the in the Arizona Senate race, this Mark Kelly, Blake Masters race. Just today, the Libertarian candidate dropped out.
Oh, really?
And endorsed Blake Masters. And the last poll
Peter Thiel is largely Libertarian, and you know, maybe they had a conversation.
I don't know. But the last poll that I saw I was looking at the numbers. I think the Libertarian candidate was getting 2.7% of the vote. Now, here's the thing. This Libertarian candidate still is on the ballot. He's not off the ballot. So, and if you've already voted in Arizona, it doesn't really matter. So maybe you voted for him already, right? But as we go into the last few days of the election, the remaining voters, if they see the news, it may sway thousands of votes. And if that's the case, and this race is as tight as the polling says it is, that's probably going to help Blake Masters.
I'm trying to see. So you're saying Oregon governor's race, Republican.
Yeah.
New York governor's race, probably Democrat, but interesting nonetheless.
Well, I mean, just today, there's a poll coming out at 45-45.
Wow. Well, what about Wisconsin governor's race?
I haven't. I know the Republican, I think the Republican's leading, but I can't remember. This is one I just haven't paid attention to.
And have you paid attention at all to the LA mayor's race? And the reason why I think that's important is because,
tell me about it.
Of course, that's traditionally Democrat, but crime is such an issue. Crime, taxes, economy is such an issue in LA. So you have Karen Bass who's a Democrat versus Rick Caruso, who's a billionaire. Rick Caruso spent like $80 million versus Karen's $11 million on a mayoral race. And Karen Bass has been winning the entire time and maybe is still ahead, but Rick Caruso is moving up fast in the polls.
What does the betting market say?
72 cents to 31 cents, Karen versus Rick Caruso. But my thinking, and I'm betting on Karen Bass to win, but Rick Caruso has been moving up fast and he's spending a lot of money.
Yeah, I actually sat down about 2 years ago with Dr. Drew as he thought about running.
Oh yeah? He should have run. That would have fit. You know, it's weird. It's very interesting, actually.
I know. He should have run. I told him he should have run for governor, but he didn't.
He has the name to run for governor. And you know, he would have had a good case. I don't know when Gavin Newsom is up for governor or whatever, but
right now.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Who's running against?
No, I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I have no idea. I'm not paying attention to California, so.
But Dr. Drew has the name. And this is a weird race where you have people like, you know, Dr. Oz, Herschel Walker, J.D. Right. Vance, who wrote one of the most popular books in history, Hillbilly Elegy. Yeah. Like all these, like, you know, quasi-celebrities or celebrities are running. And this is like I think this is actually a good trend. Like it should, like people are always complaining, oh God, politicians suck, it's business as usual. But it's good for other people to realize they have a voice also. Now, those other people now happen to be celebrities, and who cares what celebrities think? But I'm hoping for a day when anybody can run and you don't necessarily need like $150 million to run. But, you know, so far that part hasn't happened.
No, I mean, you're pulling out all the outliers, James. I mean, I'd push back and say the vast majority of candidates are not able to self-fund. The vast majority.
Yeah.
And they have to go raise the money, and which is one of the hardest things to do in politics. It's so hard.
Yeah, that's the entire job, really, of being a candidate is raising money.
That's right.
And then, because then everything is just nobody, people only actually see you on debates, and not that, I mean, as a percentage of voters, how many people go to see the candidate? How many people see the candidate in person?
It's a really good question, but it's a very small percentage. That's why I always laugh because in the 2012 presidential campaign, people are like, Mitt Romney has never gotten crowds like this. Or, you know, no Republican candidate has ever had crowds like this at a presidential rally. These are the biggest crowds ever. They want to defeat Obama. Don't believe the polls. And then he got blown out, right? Yeah. And then you saw the reverse happen, which was Trump was having these massive crowds in 16. And everybody said, yeah, we've done those. We know crowds don't work. That was the big argument back then. And then what happened? The crowds worked. So I don't know. Again, you know, one of the things this is the last thing that was top of mind, and then I'm happy to answer any other questions, but that I would, you know, ask the people that are listening right now to think about, right? We talked about this in September, that there is sort of this submerged voter that they used to have a bumper sticker on their car, they put a yard sign out for their candidates, and then because of the Trump, you know, I'm talking about Republican side, that because of Trump now, you know, they're afraid they're going to get canceled or vandalized or whatever. And they just took those signs up, but they still expressed their opinion by 2020. And now they just don't even express their opinion anymore, but they're going to vote and they're not on the polls. Like they're not showing up in polling. How big is that number? How big is that submerged voter that just says, I'm not opening my mouth because I'm going to get in trouble, but I have an anonymous vote and it's going on election day in the midterms. You know, the New York Times came out with a poll this week, right? I don't know if you saw this.
No.
They have Mark Kelly. They have Mark Kelly running 15 points ahead of Biden's approval. Warnock at plus 10 Biden approval. Fetterman plus 7. It is all over the place. It's insane to me, right? They also have Herschel Walker getting 7% of the African American vote. Okay, every other poll that I've seen has Herschel Walker getting between 15% and 25% of the African American vote. So
what's the deal? Like the New York Times, are they just catering to their audience? Like, why don't they have a legit poll? Like, again, I'm not saying one poll is right or wrong.
It could be legit. Hold on. Let's see what happens on election day. This is something, yeah. I'm saying. They have Warnock winning, Fetterman winning, Kelly winning. They have all these guys winning, right? They may even have Tim Ryan winning. I can't remember. I think they had one other one, but I just can't remember where it is. So,
by the way, I just want to say again, both Tim Ryan and J.D. Vance, I really appreciate them both as candidates because J.D. Vance did write an authentic, good book, Hillbilly Elegy. I highly recommend it. And Tim Ryan, who's been on this podcast twice, is just a really great guy. He wrote a book on meditation. One other congressman has written a book on meditation. And he ran against the most powerful woman in Washington, Nancy Pelosi. He ran against her for Speaker of the House and lost. That's like unspeakable because you're going to get slammed for the rest of your career after that.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so I was wrong. It's not Ohio. They have Adam Laxalt losing the Senate race, the one that I tell you that I absolutely believe Laxalt's going to win.
Okay.
By the way, so Adam Laxalt is a legacy runner. Yeah, his father, dad, Paul Laxalt, ran Nevada, like governor and senator for decades. Like, and he was like Ronald Reagan's best friend. So Adam Laxalt brings that whole family history.
Right. And he's running against Masto, which is the, she's a incumbent senator in Nevada, Democratic senator. So they have all those going to the Democrats to win, right? They're the only, they're the outlier. Some, you know, sometimes like in the Trump 16 election, there was one outlier, right? So I don't know. It's crazy right now. I mean, I'm looking at stuff that I trust, but we'll find out on election day. I don't see how the New York Times poll is right at all, but that's what, and you ask, where does it come from? I believe that their foundation of this poll is rooted in turnout 2020. And I don't think they're understanding that not as many people turn out or that people may switch their votes as a baseline, right? I think they're going after, you know, in polling more hardcore Dems based on how they looked at the 2020 election. Look, everybody's got their own sort of formula that they put into some of these pollings, these methodologies. So I don't know, but it's so far off from everything we're seeing that I think it's really interesting to look at what they're putting out right now. And in your state, again, they have Herschel Walker getting 7% of the African-American vote. And every other poll I've seen is between 15 and 25. I don't think Herschel gets 25% of the African-American vote, but I think he can get 15 to 20, right?
I mean, Warnock's African-American and Democrat. And but, you know, he's got his own scandals. They both have scandals.
Sure. So who is right? Who's right? I don't know. I mean, I have a hunch. You've heard me here twice. I feel this momentum. I've been around since 1996, every single election cycle. So I know what momentum looks like. I knew what it looked like in 2018 when the Democrats came in back into power. I knew what it looked like in 14 and 2010 when we had those midterms and Republicans swept massively, right? I remember being junior in college in 1995 and seeing the Republican wave, the Contract with America crew. So there are these crazy wave elections. Typically, when things are as bad as they are in this country right now, the political party in power is going to be annihilated.
So, you know, tomorrow, the Federal Reserve's meeting to hike rates, and there's already evidence that...
Yeah, what do you think?
There's deflation happening instead of inflation. Like, housing prices declined for the first time, like, since the Great Recession in the data last week. So there's reason to believe the Federal Reserve might not raise rates, but they probably will raise rates. Do you think that's politically motivated because, you know, Powell's Republican doesn't want Democrats to see a good stock market in the last week?
I'm hopeful that these people don't make life and death financial decisions for people based on election 4 or 5 days away.
I hope you're right about that. I personally think nobody should be raising rates right now. But
do you think they'll raise rates?
I think they'll raise rates, and I think they'll indicate, you know, because they sort of have to stay phase two because they said they were going to raise rates forever.
0.75 or a whole point?
Definitely not a whole point. I'm debating everybody. The market's baking in 75. I'm kind of pulling for 50, and then they put on a pause. They say we're going to wait and see, and the stock market's going to roar after that because, you know, upwards.
Well, that was my next question is, let's say Republicans get control of the House and Senate. If you were investing, you're not telling anybody how to invest. If you were investing though, how would you buy right now and the gamble that the Republicans take over and the market goes up, or what would you do?
There's a lot of nuances to the question. Thank you for asking. I would be a buyer right now for several reasons. One is this bear market started in November of last year. Think of the Great Recession, November 2007, just like November 2021, the market started going down. And even though we hit the worst period in capitalism's history in 2008, the bull market started in March of 2009. So no matter what, this bear market is ending pretty soon, within a few months, if not sooner. So that's why I'd be a buyer now. But also, deflationary data, we know housing prices are a leading indicator of the entire economy. The fact that housing prices are already declining means the Fed has already overshot their in raising rates. They've already done this, and they know this, that there is no, yes, there's inflation in food right now, but that's going to all stop because housing represents 30% of the U.S. economy, all the industries related to housing. If you can't, if nobody could buy a house because mortgage rates are so high, the economy will fall apart. So the Federal Reserve knows this. So whether it's this, you know, meeting or the next inflation report or whatever, the market's just going to start roaring when they sense that the Federal Reserve is on pause. And that's going to happen sometime this month. It might have already happened, actually. It might have happened starting when we got the housing data. And so I'm a huge buyer right now. I think this bear market is going to be over soon. Whether it's fully over, we don't know, but it's going to be over. The Fed is going to have to stop raising rates. In fact, they might have to reverse course if there's deflation. And then when we get to the politics, we all know that a deadlocked Washington is good for the market. So when the president is Democrat and the Congress is Republican or vice versa, the market goes up. Because better for government to not do anything and for the private sector to do things, that's better for the stock market, which is private sector. So regardless of all the political issues, just a deadlocked system means the Wall Street goes up. Now, there's some evidence that when the Democrats are in power, stock market goes up, but that's not statistically valid. I do think on issues related to taxes, which a lot of, you know, stock market investors care about, it's better for Republicans to be in control of Congress. But again, it's going to be deadlocked because the president has veto power.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
One other thing, as weird as it sounds, I'm really curious on your take. I'm sure your listeners are too. What is the market effect of Elon taking over Twitter for you?
Positive, because it shows, first off, you know, I was all my life a Democrat, and Democrats were the party of free speech. Like, we would make fun of people burning books.
Yeah.
You know, we were the party, like, Kurt Vonnegut, you know, when one of his books was being burned by some Republican town or whatever, he wrote a letter, a passionate letter to that town. And that was like the standard bearer letter of the Democratic Party for free speech. The fact that the day after Elon took over, people started tweeting, there's like a million tweets that just say ivermectin.
Yeah.
People were like testing it out, right, whether they get banned. And I think it's a good thing. Well, a couple of things. I think Twitter has, as Jack Dorsey put it, Twitter has been the public town square. That's where I go for news. That's where I go for information. Now it's going to be more reliable. It's also going to be more unreliable, but people are smart. You have to trust people that we're going to get through this, that you can find the right information and not just live in an echo chamber. Also, the fact that anybody was censored at all from Twitter ever is crazy to me. When you have the Ayatollah of Iran, and I might be misspeaking a little bit, but he said something, he tweeted once something to the effect that the only good Jew is a dead Jew or something like that. And he doesn't get censored, but the leader of the United States, who I'm not saying I'm positive or negative about, but the fact that a guy, the Ayatollah of Iran, could tweet anything he wants about Jews, not get censored, and people get censored saying hydroxychloroquine, it just seems, whether I agree with that or not, it just seems insane to me. So this has got to be a good trend. Plus, you know, Twitter is very poorly run. I don't know if they've ever made a dime of money.
Oh.
And I'd like to see a platform, a social media platform, yeah, that really becomes a public town square and not just an echo chamber. Like, I saw the Twitter employees on Joe Rogan explaining their methodology, and it was just insane. And then Jack Dorsey was speaking over them because he was kind of embarrassed. And at least this ridiculousness will end of censorship, and that's a good trend.
Yeah, I'm actually excited to see.
I agree with things that are being censored or not. Like, I don't in most cases. Yeah. But people just, when you have, like, again, the Ayatollah of Iran, I'm using him as an extreme case. He doesn't get censored, but, like, some professor from Oregon State University does for saying, hey, has anyone checked out ivermectin? Like, that seems insane to me.
Yeah, you're talking about Brett Weinstein.
No, I'm making that one up.
I think that actually happened with Brett. I think he was at Portland State or something like that. He was in Oregon, but yeah, I'm with you. Okay.
Peter Boghossian was at Portland State University and was essentially, you know, had to leave the job for ridiculous reasons unrelated to Twitter. But just in general, this trend where people who would be liberal Democrats are being pushed away from their party because of this, you know, censorship trend from a minority seems crazy to me. Like all the information, I was having daily Instagram lives about COVID where I was looking at all the issues back in March 2020 and April 2020 and May 2020, all the way through July 2020. And it was helping so many people understand the news. I got so many notes and reports, and I wasn't being biased. I was saying, some people believe this, some people believe this. Here's the data. I had people on my podcast who were epidemiologists, people who disagreed with each other. Political liberalism is about a group of people coming together, disagreeing, and then forming a consensus where some people might be unhappy at the end of that. That's what liberal really means. Right. And people have forgotten that completely. Sorry, that was my rant.
I appreciate it. No, I was super curious how you thought about it.
Yeah, and I'm also just curious to see what Elon Musk does.
I'm curious about what he does for the business model itself. Like, he's going to make money on it. He's going to get a return on his investment. I'm convinced of that.
Well, I could see what he's doing initially, which is, first off, he's getting rid of all bots. Like, you know, I'm sure some people have lost, you know, 30% of their followers. I've lost about 0.1% of my followers in the past few days because probably I had some bots following me. Some people pay for bots. I never did that, which is why I only had like a few hundred bots, but he's definitely getting rid of the bots. I like the fact that he's going to charge for the blue check mark. Like, why should some people be, you know, I have a blue check mark, but to me it seems like this elitist thing where whoever, you know, because I knew the Twitter CEO, I got a blue check mark 10 years ago, so it seems like an elitist thing to me. I'd rather people
And I only have, I don't know, 3,600 followers, and I have one. People yell at me, how do you get one? And I go, I don't know. I just apply.
Yeah, well, now it'll be clear how you got one. You're going to pay for it. But he's going to charge $5 a month for it. So that'll make Twitter money, and the blue check marks will legitimately rise up in the algorithm.
Yeah.
And if you're a bot, you're not going to pay $5 a month probably.
No.
So, you know, and whatever other verification has to happen. So,
did you know, I don't know if you know this, their stock was trading 10 years ago at something like $73. So he got it. I understand 10 years of not making money, the stock is not worth what he just paid for it. But 10 years ago, it was $73 or something around there. And so, like, you know, they haven't done anything in 10 years. Tim Pruitt.
No, it's pathetic. I visited them about 8 or 9 years ago. I spent some time in the office. I hung out with Dick Costello, who is the CEO. He also wrote the foreword to my book, Choose Yourself. I don't think anything has changed on Twitter since then. They've added a few features, like you could subscribe to people's newsletter tweets. I don't know how that works. I haven't done it. But they've hardly added any new features, and they've become so important in these elections. And then they've been, you know, I hope Elon Musk makes the algorithm public and how it's changed, because I want to see what was done to actually, look, people complain about Russia influencing elections. What about the minor employees of Twitter who are working on the algorithm?
Well, I just finished. Now I can't think of the name of it. There's a book on the story of Twitter, and I think it may have just come out, or maybe it came out a year or two ago. And that's a fascinating story about how all these guys came together and created it. And like Jack was just like a lowly employee when he started.
Well, okay. I'll tell you what happened was Ev Williams, who sold blogger.com to Google for like,
he created Medium, didn't he?
He created Medium later. So first he sold blogger.com in like 2004 to Google for, I don't know, $50 million, something like that. And then he started, I forgot the name of it, a software to do podcasting, actually. And one of his employees made a platform to send SMS messages through the internet to his friends. And more people started using that. And so Ev Williams said to all his investors, look, this podcasting thing's probably too early, which it was. So I'm going all in on this new thing my employee Jack Dorsey is doing called Twitter. And he said he offered to buy out the VCs who didn't want to be in anymore. And so, and all the VCs got out.
Yeah.
And Ev Williams bought them all back. And that's how Jack and Ev Williams, you know, basically started off Twitter.
Yeah, didn't I tell you about that book about the drug runner, the like international drug runner? Was it Nick Bilton that wrote that book that you had on? I told you you should reach out to.
Oh, yeah. Did we reach out to him? I forget.
Yeah. Well, he wrote the book called Hatching Twitter. That's the one I just read.
Oh, yeah. I've read that book. Yeah, right.
Hatching Twitter. It's a true story of money, power, friendship, and betrayal. And
yeah, I've read that book. It was an excellent book.
Oh, yeah. Nick wrote the American Kingpin that you had him on your show about that hunt for that crazy Australian guy that lived in the Philippines that had the biggest drug running operation in the world.
Yeah, I mean, the story of Twitter is fascinating because it's a really great lesson in business. And I think just now the next chapter is being written. I mean, I like that Elon is going to make people pay for the blue check mark. I like getting rid of the bots. I like if he makes the algorithm public. So far, everything I've liked that he understands management efficiency. And so, if you look at Notepad, which is the site I created, notepd.com, it's a little bit of an advertisement for Notepad. Notepad right now has all 100% of the functionality of Twitter, all of the functionality of Twitter, and we have integration with two different AI engines, one for text, one that comes up with ideas, one for images. We have this whole thing of idea lists and gamifying that and you know, keeping track of streaks and searching other people's ideas. We have this notion of challenges, which is sort of we borrowed from Quora's, you know, questions. And we have all of this functionality, and we've spent hardly any money at all. Twitter spends tens of millions a year. How does this even happen? Because they spend it all censoring people.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I don't know.
It doesn't cost money. Twitter is not rocket science. It does not cost money to run that website. I could tell you that, having built websites for 30 years. I've been building websites since the first web server was made by Tim Berners-Lee. I've been building websites. And Twitter is an old-fashioned web. It does not cost money to run that thing. So it's insane what's been happening there. So I hope Elon Musk, who tends to be, you know, regardless of what I think of him in other ways, like he tends to be a straight shooter on business stuff.
It's fascinating.
So, okay, one couple quick questions. We're going to do lightning round.
Okay.
And if it's okay if you don't know these things. I know you're focused on the races you're running. Kansas governor.
No idea.
No idea. Okay. It seems pretty close in the predicted. I'll just run through. So New York governor's race, it's 78-26.
I mean, if you're looking for a good bet, James, the New York governor's race and the Michigan governor's race, they're probably long shots, but you could make a lot of money if you picked a couple of them and one of them hits.
Yeah, I try that. The odds aren't like Republican is 26 cents. I sort of feel like that's fairly valued because that's hot. Like you point out, That would be very high for New York. Like other states are like 96 cents for the governor, you know, when it's a no-brainer. So it's not a no-brainer. What predicted is saying is that it's not a no-brainer in New York. So that strikes me as a fairly valued bet. Whereas Arizona, which is 53 cents Republican, 50 cents Democrat, that might be an interesting bet if knowing where the trend is And
you mean taking the Democrat or just taking the Republican?
I might take the Republican there.
Yeah, Kerry Lake's going to win that race.
Arizona Senate race.
Oh, the Senate race. I'm sorry, I thought you meant the governor's race. Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't know what it is. They don't have a market for the Arizona governor's race.
Then there's one.
You might not know these, but the closest Senate race in 2022, it's a toss-up between Georgia and Nevada. I kind of think it's going to be Georgia anyway.
No, I feel like it'll be between Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona will be the top three closest races.
So maybe a bet of no on Nevada would be an interesting bet because that pays off 22 cents.
Okay.
And I'm actually losing on my bet on Karen Bass in LA. I might just take that bet off and put it on one of these other things. Let's see. GOP governors after midterms. You probably don't have a handle on that. Which party will win the House in 2022? It's 89 cents Republican, 12 cents Democrat. But it's.
The Republicans are going to win the House. There's something like, I don't know, 38 toss-up races right now in the House. And I think 37 of them favor Republicans right now.
Well, so it's an interesting thing that
all they have to do is flip like five seats. And I mean, my prediction on the House is probably between 30 and 40 pickups.
Right. So it's interesting because I was able to make an interesting bet, which is that rather than bet on who will be, which party will win the House, I bet on who will be Speaker in the next House. And so.
Oh, right.
So a few weeks ago when we last spoke, we spoke in September, it was 79 cents Republicans would win the House. And so I was thinking, okay, I'll bet on that because it seemed pretty clear the Republicans are going to win the House. But then I saw Kevin McCarthy being the next speaker was only trading at 72 cents.
Really?
So it was like yeah.
Oh so, my God, I should have bet with you.
Yeah, so now he's at 87 cents. It's more kind of which makes more sense. So it used to be there was a 7 cent spread. You were basically betting 7 cents that Kevin McCarthy would not die before January.
Right.
And now it's a 2 cent bet that he would not die before January.
Or so be caught with a live boy or a dead girl.
Yeah, exactly. So that was interesting. I'll just tell you what bets I'm in. Actually, I am in the Arizona Senate race, but I'm only up a little on that. The speaker one I'm up. Who will control the Senate after 2022? That one, oddly, was 48 cents when we last spoke, and now it's 71 cents. So now I might actually take that bet off because there is, I think 71 cents is a fair price, and now it's a gamble.
I mean,
see, a lot of times you bet on these things in advance, not because you're sure the Republicans
because
are
going to see, it move enough to take it off the board, right?
Right, like 48 cents, particularly after our conversation, 48 cents didn't seem the right number to me. But 71 cents might be the right number, and I might not want to risk that. I might want to bet on the House at 89 cents becoming Republican because that's completely ridiculous. And then I actually lost one bet. This is how I do my long shots, just for this is a race that you're not interested in at all. But there was, let me see if I can find it because it's already paid off. It all paid off against me. I bet on Xi not being reelected as chairman of the Chinese Communist Party. And so I bet on that, it was almost a shoo-in that he would be reelected, but I bet like 7 cents on that. I lost. So it's not a big thing. And there was rumors that he was being under house arrest. So,
right.
And I have another long shot.
Instead, he put his former leader, the former head of the Chinese party that, do you see that where you like remove the guy?
Oh my God, that is scary. Like basically the second most important guy in China in the meeting of the Chinese Communist Party, he's suddenly picked up by security, like literally manhandled and escorted out and is never seen from again.
Yep.
And then the only other long shot I have, which I'm going to lose, is Putin president through 2022. So I'm about 6 cents down on that. I'm probably going to take that bet off.
Yeah.
And then the LA mayoral election winner, I thought that was going to be a shoo-in with Karen Bass, but Rick Caruso is spending so much money. I'm about 10 cents down on that, and I'm probably going to take one off.
Interesting.
And then I'm just trying to think. I might, based on this discussion today, I'm already in Arizona. I might bet on Nevada, Adam Laxalt. I might bet on Georgia. I wasn't sure about Georgia, but I felt like Herschel, I watched the debate and I watched it twice and I felt Herschel did better than I thought he was going to do. And again, this has nothing to do with my beliefs or anything about Warnock or Herschel, but I thought that a lot hinged on whether Herschel could just, you know, behave during the debates. And I think he did. And that probably has swayed a lot of votes. Ohio, I just feel like personally, I like both of them. And I mean, I really like Tim Ryan. He's been a great podcast guest. And J.D. Vance is a great author. I don't know their political beliefs as much, but I don't feel like making a bet there. And then I'm not sure what else to bet on.
I mean, I don't know, maybe in the future, like 2 years from now, we should come to the table with our picks and then see what the results are after the election.
It's true. Although, again, I switch bets midterm. I play like a soccer.
No, I'm saying like the day before or the week before. Like it's like kind of locked in and you can't hedge anymore.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. So then there's some interesting ones. I haven't made any 2024 bets at all. But, here's a bet. Trump files for president before 2023. I would bet no on that. The no is only 62 cents. I don't think there's any way he files before December 31st. So I might bet on the no there because it's, you know, on December 31st, it'll go from 62 cents to a dollar. And I mean, unless you have some insight, do you think he would run for president?
My insight is if you can predict anything with the Trump organization or Trump himself, then I think you're going to have great advantages. But I don't have any insight. Like I would never bet one way or the other because it's a total guess.
And there's an interesting market where who will be the next president, DeSantis or Trump, and they're kind of neck and neck, which is odd that two Republicans would be neck and neck and not a Democrat there for the one or two slot. And then there's an interesting market for the Democratic 2024 presidential nominee. It's definitely too early to call that, but Joe Biden's only at 37 cents and Gavin Newsom's at 16 cents, but it's probably fairly priced.
You don't I think Newsom is a good pick. I'd also, can you do 2028?
No, but Newsom would be interesting for 2028,
no matter what. No, I'm not talking about Newsom for 2028. I was thinking Kerry Lake and Arizona for 2028.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. I think DeSantis is like almost a no-brainer for the nominee, but you know you can't pick too early because everybody who picks early in every single presidential,
they get it all wrong.
Like, yeah, who was a front runner in the beginning of any presidential race, Democrat or Republican, in the primaries that ended up becoming the nominee?
George W. Bush.
Was he front runner?
I mean, McCain came in and gave him a scare, but he was the hands-on favorite. I was working in that presidential. I worked for his presidential campaign after he got the nomination or before he got the nomination. But I actually started working with Dan Quayle in 1999 when he ran, and I was in the middle of that, and we were. You know, like we were hamstrung. We couldn't raise money. Bush raised all the money. McCain wasn't raising money. Quayle wasn't raising money. It eventually sucked us dry and we had to drop out. And then I joined the Bush campaign. But at the time, as soon as he got in the race, it was over.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And I knew people who had met him when he was thinking about running, and I wish I'd known you then, but I heard he was very charismatic with everybody.
Yeah. Absolutely. He everything he did. I mean, I spent time with him and he's incredible, you know, but you're right. I mean, Bill Clinton never led in his primary. Obama was down.
He came in third in New Hampshire, right?
Yeah. Obama, when he announced, was second to Hillary, right? Obviously, maybe Romney, but I don't think so. I think it was a bunched primary. Trump obviously was not leading in 16. And then Biden, you know, wasn't either. It was, you know, no one knew what it was. People just coalesced behind him. But yeah.
I don't even think Reagan in 80 was a shoo-in because Gerald Ford was always on the horizon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Jimmy Carter was not a front runner at all.
No, absolutely
not. George McGovern wasn't a front runner.
Yeah.
Hubert Humphrey was like in eighth place in the beginning of 1968. You know, there was LBJ versus Eugene McCarthy. In 60, JFK had a hard time against, I think he was probably, he might have been the front runner, but he had a hard time against, I'm trying to think who he was. Oh, he was running against LBJ, actually, who they were like neck and neck. Mm-hmm. Eisenhower was up against Robert Taft, who was the, I believe, the governor or senator from Ohio at that time and the son of a former president.
Yeah.
And Truman in 48 wasn't a shoo-in because nobody really liked him. Yeah, so going all the way back, it's rare that the front runner stays the front runner. But DeSantis is a very even keeled. He's like a traditional solid Republican as opposed to Trump. So, and on the Democrat side, though, it's unclear because of Biden. You know, Biden's, other than his mental acuity, like forgetting about that, just we're having a hard time right now as a country.
My bet is he's not running. Not running. And then Gavin Newsom and Kamala and Buttigieg would be battling it out.
Wow, you think Buttigieg, what about AOC? She's probably going to run.
I don't know. I don't know on that side as much as I am aware of my side, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, in 2005, a guy that I went to, this old dude I went to church with in Washington, D.C. said, hey, I want to take you to lunch. And there's this guy just moved to Washington, D.C. He wants to break into politics. He works on the Democratic side. Would you have lunch with him and give him advice? I said, sure. We went to the Palm in Washington, D.C., and it was Pete Buttigieg.
Wow. And okay, but that's interesting. That was 2005. It was 17 years ago.
Yep.
All he's done since then is be mayor.
Yeah. Well, now he's Secretary of Transportation.
I know, because he did a good job running for president. I think he ran a well-balanced campaign. And, of course, the day before the South Carolina primary, he drops out, endorses Biden, which essentially crushes Bernie Sanders, who was winning the primaries in 2020. Yeah. And Biden owed Buttigieg. So Buttigieg did the right thing for an ambitious person. Now he has a real title. He's in the cabinet as opposed to being mayor. So yeah, he could run. Although, but it begs the question, in his first 15 years after he met with you, all he could do was become mayor. How come he didn't go for more?
He ran for mayor and lost. So that was one of the reasons. So he had to stay in South Bend and run again 4 years later. So he, you know, lost 4 years. I think, I can't remember if he ran in 07 or 09 and lost. And then he came in and won.
You know, Phil, how come you don't get these guys on your podcast? Like get Dan Quayle on your podcast, get Pete Buttigieg on your podcast.
Yeah, we're going to reboot my podcast. It's been fun. I mean, I've had you. I've had Peter Diamandis. I've had Dr. Drew on. I've had Jay Abraham. I've had Keith Cunningham. I think Keith Cunningham is the greatest guest other than you, James. I've had our mutual friend, the writer for Vanity Fair, or Esquire, Cal Fussman. I've had
Cal Fussman
on, and he was telling stories all the time. I mean, it's so I've only had my friends on. That's it.
Yeah, and a lot of those people are, including myself, are kind of like traditional podcast guests.
Yeah,
but like Dan Quayle's never been on a podcast, and where is he now? He's running Cerberus Group, the private equity group.
Yeah,
he went from being a 100 millionaire to a multi-billionaire.
It's really a good idea. I never thought about that. Yeah, I'm going to reboot at some point, but really, I've had our boy Tucker on, but
Tucker's a great guest. Tucker's the best guest.
But I'm, I just wanted to do 2 years worth of my friends because I've got a lot of interesting friends with interesting stories, and I wanted to tell those. So it's the marketing podcast, if anybody listens.
Well, Phil, and we've basically, did we meet because of this podcast?
No, Tucker introduced us.
But because of the podcast, he thought I should have you on the podcast for your book.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you wrote a book through Scribe. Well, I am so glad we met. I mean, we've become very good friends. We've visited each other and have had countless discussions outside of this podcast. And you're always such a great guest. I get such incredible insights. And I've loved politics since I was a tiny little kid. Like, I've visited the White House when I was 12 years old. I went to the Democratic National Convention in 1980. I've just been a big follower of the game of
it. We've never talked about that, but that's a very famous convention because Ted Kennedy tried to, like, you know, overthrow the delegates and win the race at the convention over Carter.
Yeah, you know, we could talk about that on either my podcast or your podcast. It was a very interesting race because Ted Kennedy was winning in the polls in the primaries, but then he had a bad interview on, I think.
Well, they asked him, why are you running for president? He couldn't answer it. He didn't have an answer.
Which, you know, okay, he should have been prepared for that now, but the reality is, there's a lot of reasons he's running, obviously. Like, his brothers were running. He was the leader of the Senate, essentially. But he also, it was complicated for him because of Chappaquiddick. But by the time of the convention, he had no chance, even if he was trying to overthrow. I had these STOP buttons, Stop Teddy on Presidency.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I got in the floor. Like, a friend of mine was in the Democratic National, a friend, I was 12 years old, but I would call these people all the time and until finally someone would say, let me in on the floor. And so I was interviewing, like, Chip Carter, Tip O'Neill, like, on the floor of the convention. And I was doing my podcast back then. And then, you know, even 1988, I was like a fan of Gary Hart, actually. Yeah. But he blew it with
Monkey Business. You know,
the whole thing. And then, but I liked Dukakis as well. So, you know, I didn't start leaning Republican. I don't know if I ever, I don't know if I'm a Republican now. I'm really nothing.
No,
I
mean, you're independent. We've had long talks. You're commonsensical, and that could be on either side, depending on where that politician lands.
Out of all the political guests I've had on, I do think the most even-keeled, actually, was Spike Cohen, who was the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party in 2020. And he was just really just a smart guy.
Yeah.
And I loved having Tim Ryan on, but I've had plenty of Republicans on, too. I've had Ron Paul. I've had on Jane Smith, who was the governor of Massachusetts. I've had a bunch of Republicans and Democrats on.
It's shaping up to be interesting on election day. I'm super, I feel, so we'll see what happens.
I'm excited, and I'm going to let you get going now because I got to change all my bets on Predicted before going to the dentist. But Phil, I super appreciate it, and we got to figure out how to bet on these things in size so I can raise money for a political betting hedge fund, which, by the way, is much more interesting to me than a stock market hedge fund, which is all rigged.
Yeah.
This is not rigged.
No, it's not rigged, but we have some inside information.
Yeah, and inside information is legal. In a betting market like this, inside information is legal, so these aren't securities.
Oh, I totally forgot, James. We got to talk about, like, if this is a red momentum, crazy red momentum election, then there are three races. We talked about them in September. They're going to come back into play. They are the Senate race in Washington State. They just had a poll that basically had the race tied. This is an incumbent Democratic, Patty Murray, who has been there forever, against Tiffany
and
Smiley.
And it has her overwhelmingly at 86 cents.
Right.
So you're saying
something has happened in the last week in that race. And I'm not saying she's going to win, Tiffany Smiley. I'm saying something's happened where the momentum has swung drastically. You're looking at New Hampshire. New Hampshire has gone up and down and up and down and up and down. It has to be sort of that plus five momentum race, right? And then there's the Colorado Senate race, which I also think has the opportunity to switch from Democrat, Republican, if it's a massive red wave. So there are three outlier races to pay attention to that I would tell you, if there is a massive red wave, one or two of those could go Republican, and then you could see 55 seats for Republicans. That's on the very, you know, very right end of that, though.
Wow. All right. Well, Phil, thanks so much, and I really appreciate it once again.
Good seeing you guys.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends.
Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.